Orale, bienvenido and welcome to a special edition of the Familia FFB podcast. I'm Jorge Martin and I'm joined by one of the longtime fixtures on the LA sports talk scene. He's one half of the Mason in Ireland show, the popular show on ESPN radio that first graced these airwaves in LA back in the 1990s. He's broadcast seven Olympics, co-hosted the Late Late Show with Tom Snyder, done morning TV on Good Day LA. And for the past year, you know, he's launched another passion project. I don't know where he's got the time for this, but the Culture Pop podcast that with stand-up comedian Sue Kalinske. So, and familia, don't fret. He's also an avid fantasy football player, which all of you LA sport ESPN radio fans will know this by now. So, and so we'll be chatting about that soon enough. So he's Steve Mason. Mason, welcome. Bienvenido. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jorge. Glad to be here.
So, you know, when you guys started, I think it was what, like 1992 there, you in Ireland?
94. I moved to LA in 92 and we started in 94.
So when you guys started back together, I remember listening to you guys back in the Extra Sports 690 days. You know, how do you account for the great chemistry that you two have, and you know, kind of what keeps you going after all these years?
Well, I mean, I've seen over the years executives, media types, just throw two people in a room and assume it's going to work. You know, chemistry is really, really rare in this business. When two people click, it just works. And the reason it works between John and I is because we are so naturally different. I've got my life. I've got, you know, I don't golf. He golfs. I enjoy my evening bowl. You know, I mean, we're just completely different. And so it works because we don't agree on anything naturally. It's not made up. We just don't agree on it because we come from two completely different perspectives.
But two different perspectives, but it comes together. You guys, it looks like naturally fun between you guys. Was that from the beginning, or how much did that evolve over time?
It was from the moment we met. I was doing nights on Extra 690. And I was playing out the string. I had 6 months left on my deal, and I was planning to leave at the end of 6 months. And all of a sudden, they threw in this guy named John Ireland, and it clicked right away. Like, immediately, I knew that it was a show. And it's been a show ever since. And our relationship has been so steady. I mean, it's been 26 years, has been so steady. I always say it's the longest, most successful relationship in my life. Which it pretty much is. I mean, I've been with my partner for 14 years, but 26 years is a long time to be doing radio, and it just worked from the beginning.
And that's just awesome. I mean, you guys have had, you know, you've interviewed everybody, practically everyone in LA sports scene over these, you know, past 26 years. Who are the ones who stand out? There got to be one, you know, one or two that really stand out.
Yeah, Kobe stands out. I got to interview Kobe, I don't know, 10, 12 times over the course of his career, his life. And the one I remember the most is after he used a gay slur. You probably remember this. Mm-hmm. At a game. He called our show the next day to acknowledge that he was wrong and to apologize. And I just remember Kobe being so forthright and so honest and so decent about it, and it just sticks in my brain as one of the classic guests. The other one is in the middle of the 2010 championship parade. I got to spend a couple of minutes with Magic Johnson before he actually got onto one of those big floats, one of those big buses, flatbeds that they use. So I got to spend some time with Magic Johnson before, and he was just, he was so happy. He was so, so magic, so, so thrilled. It was really, really cool to be with him at that time.
Oh, I got it. I heartily agree. I mean, when I look back, I'm a lifelong Angelino, and Magic, you know, so many Dodgers are my guys, but when it comes down to my ultimate guy, it's Magic. And when Guggenheim bought the Dodgers, I did an interview with him because I was still at the team at the time. And yeah, that's up there with interviewing Vince Scully for me. Gosh, I got to tell you,
I interviewed Vince Scully once too. He's rare. That's a rare interview. How did you get that?
Well, I worked for, just working for the team. Went up. I got to know him, and after a while, and you know, I got to interview him a few times over time, and it was just, the man is just a gift. He's just a gift.
The interview that we did with him, which I remember really well, I think he's been on a couple of times, was when Bob Miller was retiring as the voice of the Kings. And Vin doesn't like everything to be about himself. He doesn't want to, he's not into self-aggrandizement, but he was willing to come on to our show to congratulate Bob Miller on his career. That was the angle that it took to get Vin Scully on the show, because he's very, very rare. As you know, he's a wonderful guy, but he doesn't do a lot of press. So to come on and congratulate Bob Miller was really, really cool. We had two of the great iconic voices of Los Angeles on the same interview.
Oh, John Suhu, the Dodgers photographer, he's got a picture of Bob Miller, Vin, and Chick Hearn that he just says is one of his
all-time. They're the guys.
That's it. Those three guys and Jim Murray, that's the LA sports over the last, you know, 60 years. But
absolutely.
And you're right about Vin. He makes everybody in the room feel like the most important person in the world. And he does not make it about him. It's just, I don't know how he does it. It's just the rarest gift. So, you know, having done this for 26 years in LA, you've seen the city change over time. How has your audience evolved over those 26 years?
Well, you know, I've always, you know, I have an expression, what's new, what's next. And the one thing that I always want the show to be is evolving. You've got to be changing all the time. And you've got to be updating, and you've got to be freshening things up. And you've also got to realize that the audience, you know, I'll be frank, I'm 55 years old. Most of our audience is younger than me. So I'm naturally, you know, a stupid kid at heart. So I think it comes across that way. And people dig that part of it. And John is kind of the straight arrow who holds everything together. But I think that, you know, we've constantly evolved. We've constantly pushed ourselves. We've constantly changed. We're very focused. You know, I always think we're talking about something. I always think, what about the guy in a truck in Pomona? What's he thinking right now while John talks about his golf game? You know, we're trying to appeal to everybody and the broadest possible audience. And so we make it big, we make it fun, and we're constantly evolving and changing.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So getting back to the Dodger days, I remember one time in particular, you accepted an invitation to sing the national anthem before a game. And I was just kind of like, you owned it. I remember listening to you on the radio leading up to it. You owned it. I could tell you were nervous, but tell me, can you describe what that was like going into the stadium, knowing there were going to be 50,000 people who were going to be listening to you sing the anthem?
Yeah. I mean, the nerves were huge. Now there's a little cheat about Dodger Stadium. I'll tell you this. So when I sang the national anthem at a Kings game, I was standing in the middle of the ice, and I had the big fear of the anthem is that you're going to forget the words or screw up the words. At the Kings game, I couldn't see any words. At the Dodgers game, the words were on the scoreboard. So I could use that as a backup in case I blew a line. Cause that's always the fear, is I'm going to screw up the anthem. Then it's going to be, but the words were right up there on the screen. So I just sang along with the scoreboard.
Now, were you able to rehearse with Nancy V beforehand?
I was. We did an early version. It's tricky because if you've never been out there, there's a delay. So when you sing, your voice is coming out about 3 seconds after you sing. Mm-hmm. So it gets very, very confusing. And you've got to pay attention to your own voice and not the sound of yourself coming through the speakers. That's the trickiest part about doing the national anthem at Dodger Stadium. It's that delay. You sing and you hear it like 3 or 4 seconds later. And that can screw people up. But I figured out a way to do that by following my own voice.
Did you look up at the top deck and were you able to, did you look at that at the majesty of Dodger Stadium, and how intimidating could that be?
Dodger Stadium is my favorite sports venue in the world. I just think it's an absolute classic. And to be on the field in that role, respectfully and mediocre, singing the national anthem, which is always my goal, respectfully mediocre. I was able to deliver, and I was able to do it at Dodger Stadium. And you saw the, you know, the mountains behind the blue roof out there. And I mean, just spectacular night, unbelievable experience.
Oh, incredible. So the Mason in Ireland show has, along with touching so many people in the audience, I mean, millions and millions of Angelenos, you know, it's played a part in launching some careers of people. Jeannie Zelasco, A. Martinez, Dave Singer. You know, A even told me that you and John, he considers you and John his radio fathers.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's it like to hear something like that from people who've been able to make it in the media and you kind of gave them that boost?
Well, you know, in sports, we talk about coaches having a tree. You know, he's got a mm-hmm. really good tree. A lot of assistant coaches have come out of there. If I think about the people that we worked with before and helped, the very first one was Michelle Tafoya, who was a waitress in Manhattan Beach, who I brought in as a guest host one night. And the next thing you know, she's doing sports talk radio in Charlotte. So that she was probably the first, but Matthew Berry started as a caller to my show
and ended up
bringing him in. The talented Mr. Roto, Ramona Shelburne would tell you that she was a great writer, but I think that I helped to launch her as a radio personality, and she's been unbelievably successful at that. I mean, I take a lot of pride. A. Martinez is really an accomplished broadcaster now. And I take a lot of pride in how successful he is and how successful he has become. And I feel that way about everybody that is sort of launched from our little tree of broadcast talent.
So you're kind of, you and Ireland are the Belichick of LA radio, right?
Yeah, hopefully a friendlier version of it, but yeah.
Well, you are wearing a sweatshirt, so.
Wearing my Kobe sweatshirt.
I love that. Oh, I didn't see the 8 on there. That's awesome.
Yeah, the 8, infinity. Yeah.
8 and the 24. That's beautiful. You know, for me, that day hit me. I'm a father of daughters. Mm-hmm. How did that, you know, you having had, as you mentioned, 10 to 12 times, interviewing Kobe, seeing his birth all the way through. I mean, you saw the whole
thing. From the beginning.
You saw the air balls again, Utah, the championships. What was that day like?
Well, I was sitting at this table and about where I am right now, and I had two podcast interviews for my Culture Pop podcast, and I get through one of them, and then I get that news, and I just shouted no and froze. And didn't say anything for a couple of minutes. I was with Chris Morales, our producer, and Sue Kalinske. And I just showed him the text message that I received from my brother. And I needed to go back and verify. But it was stunning. And here's the crazy thing about that was I had to do that other podcast interview. I did it after the news of Kobe, because I had booked this person and she was great, you know, generous with her time, and it was scheduled, and I would not reschedule or cancel with somebody, even in that situation. So I did that second podcast interview with the director of a film called The Mustang. And then I got in my car and drove downtown. I thought, I've got to be on the air. Somebody's got to be on the air live. And so I just drove downtown and sort of commandeered the radio station and said, you know, we're going into live coverage of this. We need to let people vent and be emotional and talk about their memories and deal with the shock and, you know, the denial that existed that day. And, you know, I feel good about what we did that day. I think we gave some people some solace, but it was a hard, hard day of radio.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was, I remember where I was. I remember exactly where I was when I saw that. I remember it just reminded me so much of the day that Magic announced that he had HIV. I mean, it reminded me of the day that John Lennon died, but that one hit me more just because.
Which one, John Lennon?
No, Kobe.
Kobe
hit me the most just because he had so much to give, and he was just, you could see that he was really leaning into that next chapter, and he was going to be something spectacular. And believe me, I didn't expect to be asking you about Kobe right now, but I so appreciate the generosity with that and sharing. You know, you've done Olympics, you've seen LA teams win titles. You know, is there something you'd still like to cover and see happen?
I would like to cover, and I'm planning on it, the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics, which I'm incredibly excited for. You know, I think I've done 7 Olympics. And I'm thinking about going to Tokyo next year. The next year it's in Beijing, and then it's in the United States. And I think it will be a thrill to see the Olympics happen in my adopted hometown and to be able to broadcast them. So the Olympics in 2028 is the thing that I'm really looking forward to. And honestly, that might be I think that should be my last gig. Like that, the Olympics in Los Angeles should be my last gig. Everything coming full circle. With me doing an Olympics in my adopted hometown. So that's the one. That's the event.
Where were you in 84?
I was in Toledo, Ohio. I was in high school. But I was in Toledo. So I was not here for, obviously, the Olympics. But I've always been an Olympics junkie since I was a little kid. Watch them from beginning to end, all the way back. I remember 72 when I was 7 years old. Wow. And Munich tragedy. You know, I go all the way back to that. I've always been fascinated by the Olympics. And the thing I love about it more than anything else is that at the beginning of the Olympics, everybody marches in as their own country, right? At the end of the Olympics, at the closing ceremonies, everybody just comes in together. Countries don't matter anymore. You come in without your national colors, but just as part of one big body of celebration. That's what I love about the Olympics. In a crystal clear moment, that's the thing I like the best about the Olympics. Everybody walking in together at the closing ceremonies.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I remember what the city was like in 84, and I just want to see how it would be, you know, the comparison between the two. And I can only imagine what SoFi Stadium is going to look like at that point for the opening and closing. I can't wait to see that stadium.
Me too.
You know, ESPN LA is the flagship for the Lakers. So you get Laker fans you get as close to Laker fans as possible.
Yeah.
Does the excitement coming from the fans on the show feel the same as in a normal year, kind of like 09 or 10? How different is it in this not so normal year?
In a weird thing, I think the town is even more ramped up. Than in 2009 or 2010, because we went so long without sports and we didn't know if we were going to get an NBA champion in this really good year for the Lakers. So I think the fact that it's happening after a long delay is one of the reasons why the town is really on fire. I mean, this is as excited in Los Angeles as I've seen since 2010, since the Dodger World Series. People got excited about 2017 and 2018, but this is right up there. This is a lot of buzz, and I think right now, because they didn't have basketball, didn't know if they were going to have basketball, I think people are even more ramped up than normal.
Oh, that's awesome! Yeah, I was at game 6 and 7 in 2017 in the World Series, so I know what the high and low that was. Oh, forget about it.
Which year were you at the World Series?
17. Yeah, the Astros series.
Were you at any of the games in Houston?
No, I didn't go to any of the games in Houston. So
yeah, I went to all those games, including the one where the Astros clearly cheated, which was game 5, where Clayton Kershaw blew a 4-run lead and a 3-run lead. It ended up, I think, 13-12. But there is no question, if I went back and watched that game, I think I could hear trash cans banging.
Oh, I totally. Totally. It just, they just knew what you could tell. They knew what every pitch was coming. It's just, I'm actually wearing a Kershaw shirt. Just coincidentally, Clayton's. I was there the day that Clayton signed his contract as an 18-year-old draft pick. So I feel I feel like I've seen him grow up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I want to ask you about Culture Pop. You know, you and Sue Polinsky was you launched it a year ago. And I'm a big White Shadow fan from back in the day. I love the Timothy Van Patten interview. The Bryan Cranston interview was just fantastic. I love the way you guys veered off into baseball for about 10 minutes there. And he's accepted that the DH may be here to stay. So how did that podcast come about? And I mean, you got such a variety of personalities on there.
So when I was doing the Late Late Show with Tom Snyder, every night I got three guests, and they were famous to whatever degree. It was a film director, it was an actor, and it was a musician. And every night I would walk in and I would talk to somebody different. And I learned to really love that. I learned to really love conversation and the art of interview. And I don't really do it on the radio. As I'm slightly different on Culture Pop than I am on the radio. I mean, I'm a crazy person on the radio, but on Culture Pop, I get to be a little bit smarter, a little bit more intelligent, and talk to a variety of people, as you mentioned. You know, Brian, I'm thinking Deepak Chopra. I spent an hour with all kinds of people I've gotten to interview on Culture Pop. So it's been a really good avenue for me to expand sort of into some of my specialties that don't necessarily come up with the show. I love movies. I love TV. I read a lot, all that stuff. And now I got a place to do all that. And long after I'm done at ESPN, and that day is, you know, somewhere down the line in the future, because we just signed new contracts and all that stuff. But I could imagine a time when I'm just doing Culture Pop. Like when I'm done at ESPN, done with the Daily Show, I can imagine that I'll still be doing Culture Pop twice a week, forever.
So yeah, you mentioned a little bit about the Late Late Show with Tom Snyder. How different was it? And I guess you mentioned it a little bit in the last. How differently from a personal standpoint do you approach them? I mean, do you feel like you have to be almost like a little bit different in either one, in either avenue? Because especially when you were doing them at the same, you're doing them at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, the radio show is, you know, just kind of a wild sports show, right? We veer off sports all the time. We do a bunch of stupid stuff too. The Culture Pop interviews are a little bit more serious. They're a little bit more probing. What I like about it most is I like to know how somebody got to where they are. So If I'm interviewing an actor, I want to know, when did they first know that they wanted to be an actor? When did they feel like they finally made it as an actor? I mean, I enjoy artists in all fields. And by the way, I consider athletes to be artists too. But I handle these very, very differently than I would something on the show. That interview with Cranston, although that would play on the radio totally fine. But it's loose. There's no commercials. There are no restraints. That's what I enjoy about podcasts too. There are really no rules that you have to follow, as you know. You can put it together any way you want. And so, yeah, those interviews are different. Those are a little bit more serious, and they're kind of show a different side of me, I think.
I could tell. Yeah, it's a little bit more. I could tell a little bit of difference between the two. It's a great mace on both sides.
Cool.
On either side. All right, let's talk some fantasy football.
Okay.
So how long have you played? And what is it that really sucked you in? Because I know you play baseball too.
Yeah, I play baseball, which is nuts, which is just a nonstop. You're on the waiver wire every single day. In football, I think I've played in the same league for 25 years. Ireland and I are both in that league. And I'm not a believer in having multiple teams, different leagues. I just want one team to root for. So this is the only fantasy football league that I'm in. I know people that are like, I'm in four leagues. I don't know how you keep track of four leagues. I have trouble enough with one. And I've gained a reputation because of back-to-back last place finishes. that I've gained the reputation of being last place Mace. Now, this year is going to be very different. I got Christian McCaffrey. I feel really good about. Roethlisberger is my quarterback. I feel really good about. I feel like I've got a team that can finish in the money. But we will see. As Ireland says, I've got a knack for finishing last.
You can't finish last when you got McCaffrey on your team, and you just can't. Who are some of the other guys on your team?
Let's see. Allen Robinson is this week. My lineup is Roethlisberger, McCaffrey at running back, OBJ at wide receiver, Allen Robinson at flex, Darren Waller at tight end, Ravens defense, and Samuel Sloman of my beloved Los Angeles Rams as the kicker.
Oh, so it's not multiple running backs. It's not multiple running backs. It's just the one.
It's one running back, one wide receiver, and one flex.
Oh, that's
it's a weird league.
Oh, that's now. Have you mentioned just the wanting to play the one league? Have you been tempted by other formats, the 2QB format, or I mean, is this PPR or standard? First off,
it's not. PR, and I have not considered the other leagues, although I do play daily fantasy also. Okay. For the weekend. So I'm in a league with Max Kellerman, Marcellus Wiley, Jalen Rose, Raj, who's Max Kellerman's producer, and Bill Wolf, who's a big executive at ESPN. It's a really fun league that we trash talk each other through all the time. And so I do play daily, but I wouldn't consider another league.
So when you play daily, do you make sure you don't have any players that you're going to be playing against that day, that weekend?
Say that one more time.
So when you're setting up your daily fantasy lineup,
yes.
Do you try and avoid players that you're going against in
my fantasy league?
In your fantasy league?
I try not to cross purposes. Like, for example, I have that running back in Philly, Miles Simon, right?
Sanders.
Miles Sanders. So I've got him. He's going to start. He's fine now. Now, normally I would say, okay, I'll play him because he's an RB1, at worst an RB2, and I'd probably rather have him in my flex than Allen Robinson. But because Philly plays the Rams, I will not take a player – that is playing against the Rams, because that would really bother me. When all is said and done, fantasy, daily fantasy, survivor pool, all that stuff, I lost all of them this last weekend. I lost my fantasy game.
Oh, my gosh.
I went out in survivor. I lost in daily fantasy. But you know what? I got the win that I wanted, which was the Rams over the Cowboys. I put the Rams above all else when it comes to football season.
Oh, man. You should have put the Rams as your survivor pick. But
I know. I should have been a smart play.
Well, it's better to burn them, you know, on a week when they're playing like, you know, like Jacksonville or something like that.
Exactly.
Because Dallas is pretty good. So
and they are. Yeah. I mean, Dallas was actually favored in that game. I took Indy, and I just thought, well, Jacksonville sucked.
Yeah.
Jacksonville somehow, Gardner Minshew is going to screw up their ability to tank for Trevor Lawrence if he keeps playing like that.
Yeah. He's going to make him go 6-10, and they're going to get like the fifth pick in the draft. And correct. They'll be like, yeah, okay, they'll get some out of this world Lawrence Taylor type linebacker. And then Gardner Minshew will be their quarterback for the next 10 years.
Yeah. You just never know.
So before we get further into this, you know, since much of your time on the Mason and Ireland show has been with LA not having a football team, an NFL team, how did you see fantasy as kind of really driving interest in the NFL in Los Angeles during that time?
Well, let's see. Fantasy was the one thing, right? It's the one thing that we all had, even though we didn't have a football team. I do think it filled a void. I was never of the belief. There were people that said LA won't support a football team, a pro football team. I never believed that. I always thought LA would rally around a team. And this stadium, this $6 billion stadium, which, by the way, I'm getting a personal tour from Kevin Demoff a week from Monday, which I'm so excited about.
Oh, outstanding.
This new stadium is going to put LA football on the map officially. I still don't think there's a market for the Chargers, but, you know, the Rams, here's what's weird. So when I'm a little kid in Toledo, my dad was a Cowboys fan. My mom was a Steelers fan. My brother was a Raiders fan. Remember, this is mid-70s, late 70s. Mm-hmm. So I wanted a team that was going to be in the mix every year. And I chose the Rams. So as an eight-year-old kid, I was rooting for the Rams. So it's unbelievable that now here, 45 years later, I'm on the Rams flagship station. I have season tickets. I get to go to Rams game. Well, I will get to go to Rams games at a brand new $6 billion stadium. It's just funny the way things work out from a little kid to now, always the Rams.
Who is your favorite player growing, favorite Rams player, your first favorite Rams player?
Lawrence McCutcheon.
Number Lawrence 32.
McCutcheon, awesome. You know, he was those Chuck Knox teams. Lawrence McCutcheon would get 1,000 yards every year, ground chuck. He was my favorite player. I'm trying to remember, was he on the 79 Super Bowl team or not? Was he gone?
He threw a touchdown in that game.
Oh, he did. You're right. Yeah. Lawrence McCutcheon would be my list. And then all those frigging quarterbacks that we had as we were going through the 70s, you know, from John Hadle to Dieter Brock to Burt Jones to Joe Namath. It was ridiculous, the number of quarterbacks that we tried. But we finally landed on the least likely guy in the world, a quarterback from Nebraska. Vince Ferragamo is the one that actually got us to the Super Bowl, which is crazy.
You know, it's funny. I met Vince Ferragamo one time in the line at Dodgertown, Bear Beach, to have breakfast. And I was, I gotten to know Lasorda at the time, and he was Lasorda's guest. And he turns around and goes, "Hey, you want to meet Vince?" And I'm like, "You're Vince Ferragamo." And all of a sudden it's like, I'm around Dodgers all the time. I'm around the team of my youth. They made me a sports fan. And all of a sudden I got tongue tied. I became a tongue tied kid and was peppering him with questions about the Super Bowl team. And he was incredibly gracious and just so great.
And by the way, we had the lead at halftime in that game. Yes. I always like to remind people of that. We were leading the Steelers at halftime, and it got away in the second half.
In fact, I think they still had the lead when it changed from the third to fourth quarter. I think it was a two-point lead.
They had the lead going into the fourth quarter. I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I still see the picture in my head of Rod Perry. It was either Rod Perry or Pat Thomas. Just his hand is just like – an inch from the ball, and it's just about to land in Lynn Swann's hands for the game winner. And I also remember
we got to the Super Bowl Rams Patriots.
In Atlanta.
And that was a devastating experience.
Oh,
I'm a really bad loser. Like, I get super emotional and really upset if one of my teams loses. So that was devastating. The World Series. Both World Series were devastating, but especially 2017.
Yeah.
2018, I thought Boston was just a better team, and we weren't going to beat them. Joe Kelly and Nathan Eovaldi and David Price were just pitching out of their minds. But 2017 was like a dagger, and the Super Bowl was like a dagger. Those are really painful. And partly they're painful because it was expensive to go. It was expensive to go to World Series Game 7. It was expensive to go to the Super Bowl. So you invest all that time, all that energy, and all that money and come up short. It's really I'm a bad loser. I take things very badly.
I know I got to pay face value because I still have good friends in the organization, and I still spent over $1,000 to go to three games, and it was just I, in fact, a friend of mine's a lawyer, and I wanted to say, hey, can we do a class action suit and sue the Astros for
against the Astros? Yeah.
get me all my money back for the World Series. But
yeah.
You know, you talked about bad beats, and that actually leads into my next question. One of the things is, as I mentioned, we use a lot of Spanglish on our podcast. We call a fantasy bad beat corazón roto. Broken heart. Yeah. Do you have one or two that stick out in fantasy?
Stick out in fantasy. Last year I drafted Todd Gurley. He was a total bust last year.
Oh, that was tough.
I'm trying to think. Carson Palmer, I had him in one of the really good Bengals years, and he ended up breaking his leg.
Oh, that's right.
That, I mean, those are two that come to mind. To me, they're all bad beats, right? I mean, I get a bad beat every single weekend. They're all bad. They're all bad.
Not this year. Last place Mace gets retired, right?
Nope. I'm rising. Yes. It's the year of the Mace.
Yeah, I believe me. I tell you, I made the prediction that that Christian McCaffrey is in like that, is in year three of what could be like a 5-year run, like LaDainian Tomlinson had in the early 2000s, where he
totally
was
just, agree. He's unbelievably dynamic, catching the ball, running the ball, great player.
And he never seems to get a hard hit. Now, I'm knocking on wood right now. He never gets
right. Right. I mean, he's kind of elusive. You're right.
Yeah, so I'm feeling good for you on that. I don't have him on any of my teams, but
how many leagues are you in?
Four.
I don't know. How do you keep track of? I barely keep track of one,
man. And you know what's funny? In the last weekend, I lost. You know how Davante Adams went absolutely ballistic?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I had him on one of my teams that lost a shootout, and then I went against a team that blew me out of the water with Davante Adams. So I couldn't even really enjoy the great day. It's the way I keep it going. I mean, it's different groups of friends.
Right.
So I look at it that way. You know, it's like I have one group that is all friends that I play fantasy baseball with. And like it's a National League only ultra nerdy fantasy.
That's what I do. National League only ultra nerdy.
Oh, it's just fantastic. I've got Cody Housy from the Dodgers minor league third baseman, who was their top pick last year. He's in my farm system. So that tells you how.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So you're going deep, man. Good for you.
And so there's that league. Then there's the league with my family. And we play different formats there. The one with my friends on the Dodgers, my friends from the baseball league, it's two quarterbacks. So we just go nuts on that one. And then I've got a league with former colleagues of the Dodgers. It used to be the Dodger front office league, but so many people have left over time and we wanted to keep the league together that we just call it the True Blue Fantasy Football League. So, I co-commissioner on that one. So
it's like different groups of friends are in different mm-hmm. leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, and that's a great thing. One league, the one with the fantasy baseball friends. I mean, I've been playing fantasy baseball with those guys since 1990 and, with a lot of those guys. And,
my baseball league is started in 1987.
Oh, incredible. I think ours either started in 86 or 87, and I joined in 90. How fantastic is that?
We were still going through box scores in the paper and writing down the numbers, adding them up. Somebody had to add everything up. I mean, it was pre-computer. That was crazy.
Oh, and we used to keep – the first year I played fantasy football was also 1990, and we just – everything was written down. Everything was written down. We kept score based on what was in the box scores in the newspaper. I mean, football is much easier to keep track of than baseball.
Yeah, for sure.
Much easier. Well, let's talk a little bit about the local teams, kind of like from a fantasy standpoint.
Sure.
You know, there's some interesting fantasy situations going on. I mean, the Rams to start with, their backfield. You know, everybody going into the season, going into last week, everybody was thinking, okay, it's going to be, you know, Cam Akers, and all of a sudden, Malcolm Brown does that guy, and now Daryl Henderson. There's talk of him, you know, being a part of that committee when he's completely healthy. How do you kind of make sense of that backfield?
Well, I would place a bet. Cam Akers got the start in that game. He was out on the first drive. Malcolm Brown was on the second drive, and he got hot. I would make a bet that Cam Akers is going to be the guy before the season's over. My sense is that they love Cam Akers. They would not have spent their top round pick on Cam Akers if they didn't believe he was going to be a franchise type running back. I think he is going to win that job and win it outright. Now we'll always see Malcolm Brown. He's great. He's a great change of pace back. He's great at the goal line, but I think Cam Akers is going to be the back that steals the most shine this year.
Oh, outstanding. And, you know, last week, you and I are probably in agreement. I really liked what I saw out of Jared Goff last week. I thought he was much better. I thought the line did a better job of protecting him. You know, before the season, it looked like the fantasy football experts were jumping off the Goff bandwagon. Do you kind of, how do you feel? Was that too soon? And,
Yeah, I mean, you know, the way I look at it is, as a starter, if you throw out that first year that when they lost seven times with Jeff Fisher, right. That's on Jared's resume, but I don't blame him for it. Since then, he's been nothing but a winner. I mean, he did regress a little bit last year. The offensive line was not great. I think that they didn't use him the right way. They used him as a straight drop back passer, which I don't think Jared Goff is as good at. You need to get him into a play action situation, which is what they successfully did against Dallas. Jared Goff on play action is a better quarterback than Jared Goff dropping straight back. Jared Goff playing at tempo, in other words, hurry up. If he's playing hurry up, he's better than he is playing straight. So I like him to see go fast and use play action. And I think that if that's the case, Jared Goff looked really, really crisp and sharp in that game Sunday against Dallas.
No, he was great. And, you know, and the Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, they've been great for fantasy. I think they're both headed for 1,000-yard seasons. Do you think – and you and I both saw Tyler Higbee have that incredible run there at the end of the season as Ram fans. Do you see him as being that third option or maybe one of the other receivers being that extra guy?
Well, you know, I know Tyler Higbee's going to catch footballs. I mean, he has been great. He's our mini version of George Kittle or Travis Kelce. I mean, he's that guy. Not as good as those guys, but he's that guy in our offense. I really think Van Jefferson, the rookie from Florida, is going to emerge as the third option in that passing game. He made one unbelievable catch down the left sideline in that game where Jared Goff just dropped it in perfectly. Van Jefferson has got great speed, runs routes really well, and it would not surprise me at all to see him be the third option by the end of the year. By the way, I also love Josh Reynolds, who's great. Gerald Everett is great in the passing game. So they got a lot of options. But I think Van Jefferson's going to be really good.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if Cam Akers catches some balls. That's why I kept saying, somebody's got to throw it to all these guys. I'd get into discussions with people who were trying to bury Jared Goff. I'm like, somebody's got to throw it. You've got Robert Woods ranked high. You got Cam Akers. I mean, Cooper Kupp ranked high. Somebody's got to throw it to him. So, no,
Jared Goff is better than everybody thinks he is.
Yeah.
The world has decided on Jared Goff that he's less than, that he's not enough, that he's not good enough, that he's a system quarterback, that Sean McVay is in his ear until 15 seconds before the play is going to be run and McVay is actually running Goff. I don't believe in any of that stuff. I think Jared Goff is a really good quarterback and is going to have a really big year. I was disappointed I didn't get him in my fantasy league. I was sitting back on Goff, ended up going right before me, so I ended up taking Roethlisberger. But I think Goff's going to have a really good year for the Rams.
Oh, I grabbed Roethlisberger and Goff on my team, so I get to platoon them and have a
good okay. Options. Good options.
Who's home? Who's home and has a great? Who's home and playing Jacksonville or Carolina or those teams? So, well, let's talk about the Chargers a little bit. You know, there's that interesting backfield dynamic with the Rams. You got Austin Ekeler and Joshua Kelly, UCLA's Joshua Kelly, being a backfield tandem. Can you see them getting enough touches to both be players worth starting?
Well, Ekeler, I think, is a strong RB2. Mm-hmm. I think he's a strong one. I don't know, I don't watch a lot of Chargers football. I'm not a Chargers fan. But I know Josh Kelly is certainly in the mix there. But I still think Austin Ekeler is kind of your all-purpose back with the Chargers. I would play Austin Ekeler. I don't think I would play right now Josh Kelly.
Yeah, I think somewhere down the road, Melvin Gordon got so many carries last year.
Yeah, he did. He did.
I could see Kelly kind of going into that role.
And, you know, Ekeler is sort of that – third down sort of back,
yes,
catch the ball out of the backfield kind of guy, and they could use that bulldozer, that goal line guy, and maybe that is Josh Kelly.
And it could be very much a similar offense to like what New Orleans has, where Ekeler is kind of like that Alvin Kamara type, the guy who catches a whole bunch of balls, and he's such a threat out of the backfield. So, I'm hoping. No, I'm a Ram fan, diehard Ram fan. But I'm still a UCLA football fan, so I root for their players.
Ah, I get it. Well, you know, there was news today. Now, Heather Dinich from ESPN is reporting that the Pac-12 is going to start by the end of October.
Wow.
Wow. So you will get your Bruins for what it's worth.
I had a feel. I predicted it when once the Big Ten said they were coming back. I was kind of like the Pac-12. The Pac-12 followed suit after the Big Ten said they were out. So you know, maybe we'll see a Rose Bowl after all.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So hopefully it's not February.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. Really.
So Tyrod Taylor did not have a great first game. You know, I think there were a lot of people who had higher expectations, especially against a not so good defense. You know, this week they got the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. Do you think that this could be enough of a shootout between the two of them? Do you think he'll be able to keep up?
There will be one guy shooting. It will be Patrick Mahomes. And you know, that's the best quarterback in the game. That's the best offense in the game. I think that this is what I think. Tyrod Taylor was an interesting idea. He's an all-purpose quarterback. He can run the football. Their offensive line isn't great, so they wanted a mobile guy. I think within 6 weeks, we will see Justin Herbert starting.
I can see that. I did make the prediction before the season that Herbert would become the starter after their bye week, which is, I think, week 11.
Right.
But, yeah, if it's week six, that means –
if they come out of the box slow, I mean, I think they're going to come out of the box 0-2 here. If they come out of the box 0-4 or 1-5 or 2-6, at what point do you say, all right, let's develop this guy that we used a high draft pick on? Because Tyrod Taylor is not the future. Herbert is the future.
Are you worried about the Charger receivers getting enough balls with while Tyrod Taylor is the starter?
I am. I don't think that those guys are going to be as valuable in fantasy as wide receivers from other offenses. This looks like a stagnant offense to me. Tyrod Taylor seems mismatched. I don't think the wide receivers are going to see enough balls to be impact guys. Austin Eckler, I think, is an interesting play because bad teams throw the ball a lot. I'm ready to pronounce the Chargers are a bad team. That's how far ahead I am on this thing. I think they're a bad team. That's why I think they're going to go to Justin Herbert. So I would be careful in playing any Chargers player.
Yeah, I was really worried. I watched that Charger game because it was the Rams didn't play till the evening that time that night, and I was just kind of like I was flipping between that and the Breeze and Brady show, and I was just like Keenan Allen seemed to be I had such high hopes for him, and he just did not look like he was in sync with Tyrod Taylor, and that just was a little that had me a little worried. I mean that kind of leads into my next question: any players outside of LA that you're – I'm going to ask you about sleepers and players you're worried about. Any players you're worried about outside of LA?
Players I'm worried about. I'd be worried about Carson Wentz.
Mm.
Terrible first week, holds the ball too long, is an injury waiting to happen. By the way, that to me, that conversation, Goff or Wentz, is over. Goff plays every game and Wentz misses games.
Yeah.
I think Goff is the better of the two. So I'd worry about Carson Wentz. I would worry about, let me think off the top of my head. I would worry about, let me go to the other part of the question. Who would I worry about or who would I?
Who are some of the sleepers or players you're particularly high on?
I'm especially high on Cam Akers. I think that's a stash guy. Stash that guy because I think he's going to be really good. I'm really high because I thought he looked fantastic on C.D. Lamb from the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
He did not look like a rookie wide receiver. It was a really, really great game for him, a great first game. I like Henry Ruggs, who's the wide receiver up in Oakland or now in Vegas. Now in Vegas.
You get three of those.
Exactly. Some of these wide receivers, these young wide receivers, are going to be breakthroughs. And I think Ruggs and C.D. Lamb are going to be two of those.
Yeah, those guys are going to be good. I liked a little bit of what I saw in Jerry Jeudy.
Jerry Jeudy also.
Yeah, he had a couple of tough ones. What about you know, any other? And oh, and I totally agree on Carson Wentz, because his wide receivers are decimated with injuries, and their offensive line was supposed to be such a high point for them. And then all of a sudden it was just like they gave up 8 sacks, and I'm like, oh geez. And this is a guy who's had some, you know, a litany of injuries. So yeah, you just want to keep that guy upright. So.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'd worry about Tannehill, Tyrod Taylor, obviously. I would worry a little bit. No, I would not. The guys that are interesting are Kyler Murray, Josh Allen, the guys that can run now, Kyler Murray, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, in fantasy, those guys are so valuable. Cam Newton, I guess, if he's going to really run the ball as much as he did in that opener, Cam Newton becomes that much more valuable at quarterback. I'm also high on Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow is going to turn into a star. He looks like he's got all the tools to be a franchise quarterback. So those are some of the guys that I'm excited about.
Yeah, you know what? I was kind of off on Joe Burrow. And then I watched the way he marched them down the field against a really good Charger defense in that 2-minute drill, and actually I think that was a pretty ticky-tack offensive pass.
I completely agree with you. Yeah,
and I just thought, oh wow, they're gonna win this game. That to me told me, because I'm usually off of rookie quarterbacks, but
right.
But yeah, that showed me. Yeah, and you know, we're recording this before the Bengals play the Browns, so we might get to see a little more of his coming out party.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm actually, as we talk, I'm flipping around the dial.
Okay, just a couple more. So.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
Oh, awesome. So you know, just kind of, how do you kind of, what's kind of your process of getting ready, both for, you know, studying for the draft and also setting your lineup during the season, both for, you know, the latter being for both your team and for daily fantasy?
I really like Pro Football Focus. I think Pro Football Focus, PFF, is just smarter than anybody else on the internet about football. You know, Chris Collinsworth is part owner of it. Or maybe he started it. I'm not sure. It's his operation. Yeah. But I use those PFF grades. I like to see, you know, they tell me who played really well and who didn't play well. You know, like Aaron Donald was a 99 this week. He was the best player in the league. They rate everybody on a 1 to 100 scale. Same thing with daily fantasy. It helps me to look where they were ranked in the previous week to be able to pick them for this week. So Pro Football Focus is the resource that I use the most.
Yeah, I totally agree. They're other world. I pay for that subscription. It's fantastic.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and today you guys had the Fez on your show talking about sports gambling. How do you use sports gambling to kind of help you prepare for fantasy for that week? Do you ever mix the two worlds?
Do I mix the two worlds? Not. Well, I mean, coming off a bad loss, you know, sometimes you want to play guys like that. Like the one thing that scares – Rams are actually 1-point favorites in Philly. The one thing that scares me is Philly just lost a really bad game and maybe they come out on fire. So sometimes when you lose a game, like Indianapolis, I would expect to have a really good week after losing to Jacksonville last week. I think those guys are going to be fired up. So just looking at teams coming off really bad losses, I like to play guys on those teams.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, Cleveland's got – well, tonight is
– I mean, the game's just starting, but I think Odell Beckham Jr., everybody wrote him off after one game. I still think he's going to have a good year.
I agree. I think he's going to have – that's just another world defense. So I mentioned earlier how I loved how the Bryan Cranston interview kind of veered toward baseball there for the end, and you guys talked about the universal DH. Wanted to ask a baseball question. You know, we're feeling really good about the Lakers winning it all. I know that the Dodgers had an incredible run there. How are you feeling about the Dodgers going into the, you know, we're now about 10 days from the end of the season?
I think it's going to be challenging. You know, that if they stopped it today, if it ended today, it would be a first round matchup against the Giants, 3-game series against the Giants. Now that would be fun, right? 'Cause it's the Giants, But a three-game series, man, anything can happen. I've been saying if the Dodgers get through the three-game series, I think they'll win the World Series. But that three-game series is just – you shouldn't have a three-game series in the playoffs. It diminishes everything that you've accomplished during the course of the season. I'm okay with the new playoff system if they're five-game series to start. But a three-game series, I think, is way too small a sample size to be able to determine the best team. And then our second-round matchup is going to be the Padres. And we just saw them. It's going to be a dogfight. I mean, Padres, I like their pitching a lot. Mike Clevenger's good. And Dinelson Lamet is really good. And so is Chris Paddock. And Fernando Tatis Jr. is one of the great stars in the game. So that's a really tough matchup in the second round. But I think the Dodgers advance. And in the end, I think they're going to face either Tampa or Oakland in the World Series. But I do think the Dodgers are going to the World Series.
No, it's going to be fun. It'll be strange if they're celebrating winning the World Series in Arlington.
Yeah, very strange. Very strange. I don't know how we're going to celebrate these championships. I mean, I think the Lakers are going to win it all. I feel really good about that. But how do you celebrate? Virtual parades? I'm not sure what you do. You can't parade down Figueroa. Same for the Dodgers. Can't parade down Figueroa. Can you imagine what, if the Dodgers win it all, what that parade would look like?
Oh, my God, I mean, yes.
After 30-plus years, what that parade would be unhinged. It would be incredible. So the fact that we don't get that this year is unfortunate if we win. But, I think we've got a chance to win both championships.
Well, I would hope that, they win and then maybe they do the parade in, March.
When the world is more normal.
When the world is normal again and there's a vaccine and people, it's like, okay, now we're going to do it on this Saturday and all of LA is going to celebrate.
Good idea.
Maybe we celebrate both. Hopefully we celebrate both championships like in 1988 because the Lakers and the Dodgers won both. The Lakers and the Dodgers both won
that. We all need a ray of sunshine this year. It would be great to win a couple of championships.
Well, I wanted to end with this question, kind of veering back to the original question. So you grew up wanting to be an actor.
Yes.
You mentioned on one of your recent podcasts when you were a kid. How has this been for a fallback plan?
Really lucky. Really lucky. I mean, I'm extremely fortunate to have been at the right place at the right time, right doors open, met the right people. I mean, the business is mostly, I consider myself to be talented, but definitely not the most talented guy in the world. But I work really hard. I work really hard at it. But there are moments in my life where things could have gone one way or the other, and it always winded up going the right way, met the right people, had the right mentors. I mean, the truth is, to get to where I am, you've got to run a lot of traps, and you've got to get lucky. I got really, really lucky and fortunate with the people I met and the places I worked and the decisions I made. I got lucky, I'm really fortunate and I hate, it's kind of a cliche, but I'm really blessed. I really am blessed.
Oh man. Well, Mace, thank you so much. Gracias. Gracias un millón. As my family would say in Spanish, fue un gran placer. It was a great time. It was awesome chopping it up with you. This is awesome. Familia, I hope you enjoyed this as half as much as I did because this was fantastic. Mace, you want to point people to your socials and
You can follow me on anything at Venice Mace, MASE, and the Culture Pop podcast is available at stevemason.com, and there's an easy way to subscribe on iTunes or Spotify.
No, it's awesome. I'm a subscriber, and you guys will really enjoy the interviews, and it's even more relaxed Mace than he is on the show.
Yes.
Familia, you know where to find us at Familia FFB and on the familiaffb.com website. Again, Mace, thank you so much. Hope good luck on your bets this weekend, but more good luck on your, well, I know one of your bets is on the Rams, so.
Yes. Yes. So, go Rams. Hey, thanks a lot for having me, man. I had a great time.
Thank you so much, Mace. I appreciate it.